Our second reading comes from the book of Exodus, chapter 3, verses 1 through 15. Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law, Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led his flock beyond the wilderness and came to Mount Horeb, the mountain of God. There, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of a bush. He looked, and the bush was blazing, yet it was not consumed. Then Moses said, "I must turn aside and look at this great sight and see why the bush is not burned up." When the Lord saw that he had turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, "Moses, Moses." And he said, "Here I am." Then God said, "Come no closer. Remove the sandals from your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground." God said further, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. Then the Lord said, "I have observed the misery of my people who are in Egypt. I have heard their cry on the account of their taskmasters. Indeed, I know their sufferings, and I have come down to deliver them from the Egyptians and bring them up out of that land to a good and spacious land, to a land flowing with milk and honey, to the country of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. The cry of the Israelites has now come to me. I have also seen how the Egyptians oppress them. Now go. I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt." But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" God said, "I will be with you, and this shall be the sign for you that it is I who sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God on this mountain." But Moses said to God, "If I come to the Israelites and say to them, 'The God of your ancestors has sent me to you,' and they ask me, 'What is God's name?' what shall I say to them?" God said to Moses, "I am who I am." God said further, "Thus you shall say to the Israelites, 'I am has sent me to you.'" God also said to Moses, "Thus you shall say to the Israelites, 'The Lord, the God of your ancestors, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever and my title for all generations.'" This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. The title of this morning's sermon is Not Consumed. Not Consumed. When I was a kid, I never quite knew what to make of the image of God speaking to Moses through a burning bush. I've filled in my share of coloring pages in Sunday school, taking great care to draw within the lines the brown for the trunk and the green for the branches, and then chaotic wild red and orange scribbles all over the page for the flames. I got the picture, but not quite what it meant. Our children's Bible wasn't much help either at home. It offered an illustrated Moses in the desert looking mildly surprised at a shrub with some modest flames licking up the side branches. Then there was the classic film Prince of Egypt, which I'm old enough now that my mom brought me and my brothers to see in theaters in its original release. It offers a startling vision of a mysterious, ethereal white flame surrounding what looks kind of like a bonsai tree in a cave. It's beautiful and otherworldly. From stained glass windows to tapestries to illuminated manuscripts to Bible coloring books, Christians and Jews have shared the strange image of a bush that is on fire but not consumed. What could it mean? While I've been praying through and reading over this passage this week, I've been thinking about how terrifying and powerful fire can be when it burns in nature. In 2016, Len and I spent Christmas with her parents, Thomas and Dee, in her hometown, Knoxville, Tennessee. Wildfires had raged through Smoky Mountain National Park just a month before, and as we drove through Gatlinburg and Pigeon Forge in the mountains, you could see entire mountainsides where forest had been destroyed. Within minutes, flames had consumed towering trees that took years, generations, to put down roots and spread out branches. Homes and businesses that people had built over a lifetime were ruined after strong winds carried the fire down from the mountains. It was an awful thing to see. In the story of Exodus, Pharaoh has afflicted the Israelites like a consuming wildfire. For many years, Pharaoh has not treated the enslaved Israelites as human beings with inherent dignity and worth, but rather as an expendable resource that he can use or dispose of as he pleases. He has burdened them with labor that crushes their bodies and spirits, forcing them to build cities and monuments to his power and authority. When Pharaoh and the ruling class of Egypt begin to fear how numerous they've become, Pharaoh decrees that every infant male child born to a Hebrew family must be destroyed. Last week, Len preached about how women who feared God, the midwives Shiphrah and Puah, young Miriam and her mother Jochebed, Pharaoh's daughter, all of them resisted Pharaoh's ruthlessness by saving a child named Moses. As a young man, Moses kills an Egyptian overseer who was beating an enslaved Hebrew man. When Pharaoh demands Moses' life, he flees to the wilderness of Midian where nomads live. Moses has escaped as if from a raging wildfire. He is left behind Pharaoh's house and the home of his Hebrew parents and siblings, and in the open desert, Moses embraces the solitude of a herdsman, traveling days on end in search of pasture. In Egypt, life becomes harder for the Hebrew people while Moses is gone. Exodus tells us that when Pharaoh dies, the Israelites hope that this might be a moment when their hardships ease. Jewish scholar Nahum Sarna observes that in a royal transition of power in Egypt, a new ruler would customarily show some gesture of clemency or generosity, setting prisoners free, cancellation of debts, easing up on labor for enslaved people. Not in this story. The new Pharaoh continues the same policies as before, consuming and destroying the lives of the most vulnerable people in his empire. The Israelites groan under their oppression, and the God of their ancestors hears their cry. When God appears to Moses in a burning bush, it is a sign that God's power is not like the might of the Pharaoh's. Whereas God's power is a consuming fire of violence and fear, God's power is the fire of steadfast love. This steadfast love makes human beings, even all creation, come alive with light and warmth without destroying them. God's steadfast love for enslaved people of Israel will be manifest as justice for the oppressed, liberation from slavery, deliverance to a land flowing with milk and honey. The philosopher Cornel West says that justice is love lived out in public. Justice is love lived out in public, and out of an abiding love for God's people, God has chosen Moses to return to Egypt and to confront Pharaoh with a simple demand: let my people go. Hi, mommy. Old Testament scholar Terence Fretheim notes that unlike Pharaoh, who coerces and demands, the living God does not threaten Moses with punishment. God reasons with Moses, hears his objections, answers his questions, persuades him to go. In a culture where knowing someone's name gives you the power to make a claim on them, to ask something of them, God reveals the divine name, I am who I am, which some scholars say could mean, I will be who I will be. God will be God no matter what, and God lets Moses be Moses in their work together. In every generation, God dares to collaborate with human beings who make mistakes, whose courage fails, who learn and grow over time. God is still who God is. God is faithful still. Life with God is not unlike the burning bush. God helps us brighten and warm with love without using us up. God confronts the systems and powers of this world that treat the neighbor as expendable or disposable. God's confrontation with Pharaoh is not bound only to stories from thousands of years ago. The struggle for justice and human flourishing continues today. Sometimes it's hard to think of examples of people whose lives bear witness to God's love lived out in public, God's justice. Values like generosity, kindness, love of self and neighbor appear to be limited resources in short supply, tapped out, exhausted. Many powerful rulers in our world seem to think that empathy is a weakness, compassion a waste of time. Is there anyone out there today who seems to burn brightly with love without being consumed by the temptation to exert power over others? On Tuesday afternoon, Len and I were with a crew of volunteers in the assembly room just down the hall, packing supplies for children in Trenton for the new school year. And my brother Joseph texted me from Nashville that Dolly Parton had passed away. For those of you who don't know, I'm married to Len, who is a fifth-generation Knoxvillian, and so Ms. Parton has become an increasingly important person in my life for the last 15 years. Some of you this week have even sent us condolences as if we were family members or close friends, which is really flattering and touching. If you're involved with Princeton Presbyterians and curious about getting involved, you're invited to our Holly Dolly Christmas party in September or in December, where we put on Dolly Parton's Christmas albums, we enjoy good food, and we collect books in partnership with the Presbyterian Campus Ministry at Michigan State. In any case, I have heard and learned a lot about the patron saint of the Smoky Mountains. And the truth is, if Dolly had only left us her legacy of music, that would be extraordinary enough. The working people's anthem, 9 to 5. The portrait of a child who is poor but knows she is loved in coat of many colors. The soaring promise of light of a clear blue morning. Dolly Parton sang with deep faith in God and compassion for others, and she lived it out through her philanthropy. Her Imagination Library has donated more than 300 million books to children around the world. She was unequivocal in her conviction that Dollywood Theme Park in Pigeon Forge would always be a place where all families, straight and queer, are welcome. She offered scholarships for kids in Sevier County, where she grew up, and anyone who worked at Dollywood. After the wildfires destroyed so much of Gatlinburg in 2016, she donated and raised more than $12 million for affected families. During the pandemic, she gave $1 million to COVID vaccine research. Len and I made sure that we got the Dolly shot when we went in for our vaccine. One of her last acts of generosity was a major gift to East Tennessee Children's Hospital, which is now Dolly Children's Hospital. She was a human being who, over her long life, could make mistakes, grow and change with a sense of humor, and put down deep roots not only in East Tennessee, but in the conviction that God loved not only her, but everybody unconditionally. I think Dolly Parton was really special. She burned brightly with creative genius and generosity, and somehow, miraculously, she was not consumed by the temptations of extraordinary fame and fortune. We might not see another person like her in our lifetimes. And if you're online a lot like I am, you may have seen a simple line showing up in the outpouring of tributes and praise: "Be like Dolly." There's something to that. Dolly is so inspiring and compelling. And I think also that God calls each of us, as we are, to burn brightly where we are with that same passion for love and justice. As I said earlier, Len and I learned that Dolly passed away while we were working in the assembly room with members of this church who were 5 years old and in their 80s. We watched you put together pencil cases and folders and notebooks in backpacks so that our neighbors, little kids, will have a good start to the school year. This Sunday is when we take up our hunger offering and we participate in efforts to alleviate food insecurity and make life just a little bit easier for friends and neighbors. I watch you welcome guests to Arm in Arm's food pantry during the week. And a few weekends ago, you served barbecue chicken to hundreds of neighbors at St. Mary's in Trenton on a Saturday morning. None of us are perfect. None of the work is perfect. All of us are learning to do better than we did before. But in this time, God asks us to burn brightly as witnesses to the promise that a world is possible where everyone can have enough to live, where no one is consumed. God partners with us to share with the world justice, which is simply love lived out in public. Amen.